Hi, this is Ken McCarthy, and you're listening to another in the Pre-System Teleseminar Series. And these are the teleseminars that we give away every year leading up to the annual System Seminar. This year's System Seminar will be held in Chicago, May 30th, 31st, and June 1st. And every year we give away a brand new series of interviews with our faculty members, this year 25 faculty members, so that you can get to know who the faculty members are, what their backgrounds are, and what they're going to be sharing. We design these calls to be full of content, so they're not a come-on for something else. We will give you material and information that you can use in your business right now, today. So I encourage you to listen to the whole thing, and you may even want to listen to it twice. In recent years, we've seen an explosion of multimedia content on the Internet. To a certain degree, some of it started back in 2002 when we had Flash Audio. Mike Stewart, one of our students and presenters at the early system events, was one of the people that innovated that area. We've always had audio on the Internet. In fact, at the first conference I did in 1994, we did an audio demonstration on the Internet. And we always could theoretically do video on the Internet. It just wasn't terribly practical. Well, in the last couple of years, it's become not only practical, but dead easy to stream audio and video and other multimedia files on the Internet. And that has raised the bar. Clearly, the Internet is no longer a text-only medium. It's a text plus photograph plus audio plus video. And who knows, maybe someday we'll get to, you know, holographs as well. But it's become a big part of the industry. It's something that just about everybody needs to pay attention to. And so we are always looking for the best possible experts and authorities on this subject that we can find. And this year we've been very fortunate, as some of you may know, I did a tour of the country this year, and I visited about 8 different cities, and I sat down and met with lots and lots of Internet people in their hometowns. And I got a reference to this individual who we're going to be talking with today from a colleague in Austin, who's an extremely good Internet video guy, and he said, oh, boy, if you want to talk to somebody good, you really should talk to Lon Naylor. And so, Lon, that's how we found you, and you and I have had several conversations now. We've even done a project together, and you're going to be speaking on video and multimedia at System 2008. Welcome, Lon Naylor.
Hey, thanks, Ken. It's great to be here. And, yeah, that's a pretty interesting story how we hooked up, and I'm really happy and really excited to be part of the faculty, so thanks for that.
Lon's got an amazing background in this subject because Internet video is fairly new, and Internet multimedia is fairly new, but there's nothing new about video, and there's nothing new about multimedia presentations. And there are people who have been already doing these kind of presentations for years and years and years in some pretty high-stakes situations, and they've already learned how to do it. So it's not necessary for us to reinvent the wheel, and that's why I'm particularly happy to have Lon on this call and have him as a faculty member at System 2008 because he is a pro at this kind of presentation. And Lon, can you tell us a little bit about your background so people get a sense of where you're coming from with all this?
Sure. Well, I like to call myself a 29-year veteran of the computer industry. I've been doing this a long time. And I spent the last 10 years of my professional career as a senior engineer with Microsoft. And I got very early into the game of the whole Internet video thing because, you know, anytime there's a new technology to be had, Microsoft likes to at least dip its toes into that. So I've been actually involved in video streaming on the Internet since about 1996, early 1997. And towards the end of my career at Microsoft there, I actually retired, so to speak, in 1999 at the age of 41. And I've pretty much been just keeping interested in technology, and Internet video is certainly something that just kind of floats my boat, and I like to think strategically, and Internet video certainly is one of those areas that's, you know, all the pop and buzz right now, so that's kind of where I usually like to end up in terms of where technology's going. I like to be on the latest, greatest edge, and, you know, that's pretty much the story. So I've been doing it for quite a while. And I like to think strategically. I like to think outside the box quite a bit. And I think that's kind of led to the levels of success that I've had so far. So that's kind of where I've been, where I'm at, and definitely where I'm going. I follow this strategic route.
Great. Great. Now, you say that you were an engineer at Microsoft, but you actually were involved in designing presentations.
Yeah. One of my major focuses there was as a senior systems engineer out in the field. It was, you might not come as any surprise to you that Microsoft has offices all over the world, and I was based in Phoenix, Arizona. We were called the Southwest District, and we covered Arizona, New Mexico, and Las Vegas from there. And my job description at Microsoft was basically to remove technical objections to the sale of Microsoft product. So we worked very closely with the sales teams and worked with the major accounts, the Honeywells, Allied Signals, Sandia National Labs of the world, and things like that. So a big part of my job was to do presentations, technical training, sales presentations. And I think last count at Microsoft, I did 423 presentations over my 9.5-year career there. So definitely a lot of experience in that area.
This may come as a surprise to some listeners, especially sort of what I would call retail users of Microsoft products. You really don't think in terms of Microsoft having a sales force or needing to persuade people or individuals or institutions specifically to use their products. You know, a lot of people think, well, gee, isn't Microsoft the default for everything, and what's the big deal? But can you give us some insight into actually what Microsoft is actually up against? In other words, Microsoft doesn't just announce, hey, we've got a new operating system or we've got a new series of programs. Just take it.
Well, sometimes we did, but more often than not, there actually is a whole lot more involved to it than that. Like you mentioned, you know, we went into major accounts, and some of these, you know, larger companies at the time in the early 90s, for example, I'll use Las Vegas as a great example, the Mirage Resorts, or pick a resort on the Strip in Las Vegas. Essentially, from a computing standpoint, they were pretty much all running their core businesses, like reservations, you know, and all of the other business systems that they did on minis and mainframes. And what we did as Microsoft was we went in and tried to convince all of these people to replace those tried and true, time and battle tested platforms with, you know, something called Windows NT, which was in its infancy at that point. And so, as you might expect, that is not an easy row to hoe all the time. So there definitely was a lot of technical positioning, a lot of presentations to CIOs, CEOs of some pretty big major corporations that was absolutely necessary to kind of get foothold in a lot of these places. And again, you know, when I started in the early 90s, there were software applications like Lotus 1-2-3. I'm sure you remember all of these. WordPerfect. Novell was the default for local area networks. And essentially, that was our competition. When Windows first came out, it was not the rock and roll success that was thought to be later on in that decade. So there was a lot of work to do there to garner market share from a lot of those other companies. So,
So bottom line is even Microsoft had to and still has to do a lot of selling.
Oh yeah,
face to face.
You bet, all day, every day.
And a lot of, I'm sure all of them, but some more so than others. A lot of these presentations that you did were pretty high stakes. You know, in other words, with a lot of money riding on the table as to the outcome of your presentation, whether people bought your ideas or didn't.
Yeah, and there are a ton of great stories that go along with that. Sandia National Labs is a great example. As you might guess, that's a very engineering-oriented location. And so Unix, of course, was the platform of choice there. And going into an environment like that, and again, trying to convince a lot of these hardcore Unix fans that, you know, Windows NT was the way to go, was a fairly high-stakes kind of game, as you say, and it took about 4 years before we even got test environments into situations like that. So,
and these presentations, I mean, even though they were, some of them were technical in nature to technical experts, I doubt they could have been, you know, they could be boring or dry or less than impactful.
Absolutely. I mean, and it would depend upon the audience, of course, which is always the basis of a good presentation. Who's your audience? That's the very first thing you think about. So if I was delivering a presentation to a small engineer community inside of, say, Sandia Labs, then my presentation would have to be, by necessity, very technical in nature, because that's what they were going to hit me with. But by the same mm-hmm. token, you have to have executive buy-off. So you have to present at a more strategic level. And then one other aspect of presentation was that we had to train all of our resellers, the Computerlands, MicroAges, and things of the world, both the technical teams and the sales teams. So there was a very wide variety of presentations. And then, of course, my favorites were always the product launch events. And these were typically really... You know, I don't know if you've ever been to a Microsoft launch event, but they're very entertaining. They're extremely well put on, and they really spare no expense when it comes to launching a big product. And the Windows 95 launch is a good example of that. We had a really good time.
I do remember that, actually. I remember the hoopla around it. That's funny, because I thought product launches were invented 3 years ago by an internet marketer.
Just a joke.
So other companies do that. You mean this has been going on for a long time?
Yeah, a little while.
How do you know? How do you like that? So the reason I wanted to talk a little about his background, so you understand that he comes to this from with more than a little bit of experience, and the very same challenges that he faced in getting technical people or executive people or retail people to understand and embrace and take action, sometimes action involving making multi-million-dollar decisions. The very same things that he learned doing that over 400-plus interviews in very high-stakes situations, these same principles work for you, no matter what you're selling. And so in this call, what we want to do is cover some of the things that Lon discovered over the course of his 9-plus years doing this and all the presentations that he did. So, Lon, let's just jump into it. What would you say is the biggest mistake that people make when they're putting together a multimedia presentation, whether it's, you know, a live one for a live audience or whether it's a canned one that's going to play on the internet? What's the biggest thing that you would tell people, hey, be careful, don't do that, it's a big mistake?
Well, I'm going to go ahead and give you one for each scenario, and they kind of cross over to a degree. Probably one of the biggest mistakes is that, and especially I'm going to kind of slant it towards the internet marketing kind of world, and that is that people sometimes don't take as much time, I think, as they could or should to get prepared. There's a very big contingency of folks out there that, you know, they want it really easy, they want it really fast, and they want it right now. And, you know, I don't know how many Camtasia presentations I've seen, for example, that to just fire up the application and with no clue whatsoever of what they're really going to do, just go ahead and start babbling along about something. And what you do there is you risk a couple of things. One is your credibility. You know, if you're not prepared, if you don't come off at least as being an authority on what you're doing, if you make all kinds of silly mistakes that just a little bit of preparation time could have eliminated, then that's a problem. And I think that's probably one of the major mistakes that people make in that respect. One of the other really big things that I see going on a lot with the online delivery of videos is there's an old saying in the video production, as it were, is that 60% of a video is actually audio. And if you see one problem that's predominant on video productions, screencast productions that are being delivered on the internet today, I would say that it is the audio quality. Explosive volume levels, or you know the phenomenon called plosives, wherever you get too close to the microphone when you pronounce certain consonants and you get this really booming effect, It's called a plosive. And if there's one thing that you can do to take an even otherwise crappy looking video and make it more effective, more watchable, and just appear to be overall more professional, that would be to take some time to, I call it, ace the audio. So those, I think, are probably two of the biggest things that people make mistakes in. Not being prepared enough, and then having just really poor audio quality.
Okay. I worked briefly in the post-production side of filmmaking in an audio post-production studio. And that's the part of the process of movie making where you add the soundtrack, and you add and perfect the soundtrack. And one of the things I learned was you can have bad picture, and if the audio is good, it'll carry the day. Whereas you could have the most beautiful picture in the world, and if the audio has the slightest flaw, you kill the effect entirely. So, yeah, I definitely can confirm what you're saying. Well, let's take this from the positive point of view, then. Or are we going to talk about some more things that people should pay attention to, mistakes to avoid, errors to not make?
Well, I think the one thing that I would add to kind of the first statement that I made there as far as preparation goes, you know, I talk to a lot of marketers out there, and one of the things that I get hit with all the time is that, you know, I'm not really that concerned with the quality. I put the video up, and it's converting okay, you know, so I'm a happy guy. The one thing that I would caution and say about that is that the novelty is still there as far as being able to use this type of medium in marketing situations. But I would submit to you that the day is rapidly approaching when quality will more and more matter, because as we put content out on the internet and that content grows and grows to the point where, you know, obviously viewers or our eyeballs, our market, have tons of choices to make in what it is that they choose to view and consume, that very quickly people will start to make the distinction between someone that does crummy videos and someone that does high-quality videos. So I think that's a very, very important aspect. And even more so strategically moving forward, if you look at things like Apple TV. Have you heard of this?
Tell us about it. I have been looking into it. It's kind of an amazing initiative on their part.
Yeah, well, and I think it's, again, it's a strategically looking forward type of a thing, but Apple TV is essentially a piece of hardware that you can buy from Apple. It sits between your computer and, say, your 50-inch plasma TV screen with the home theater sound. And you can download to your computer anything off of iTunes. That means podcasts, YouTube videos, things of that nature. And this little hardware device wirelessly synchronizes it to a really cool user interface on your television set. So I read this as your video podcast on TV, or essentially, way to go, my friend. You now have your own television program delivered hot and fresh, compliments of the largest media distribution system on the planet, which is very cool. And quality is going to matter on that type of a platform and in that kind of environment. So
I just want to say to listeners, just think of the power of that. It used to be, not long ago, the only way to get on television was either to pay a fortune to buy little tiny bits of time or to work in the television industry and work your way up the ladder and maybe get lucky and maybe not get lucky. And now, if you can produce quality content, and you can build an audience using the internet, you can have viewership equal to cable TV programs right now. I mean, it's a matter of audience building, and it's a matter of producing the content. And if you can do those two things, you're in business. I was amazed, for example, to learn that there's a famous political analyst program called Crossfire. I don't know if you remember. It went out of business just a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I was amazed that they had only 100,000 viewers in the last years per program. I thought, my God, that's not many, you know, for a program that has such influence. So, and then a lot of our listeners have, you know, smaller enterprises where 5 or 10,000 viewers could mean, you know, tremendous results for their business. And, you know, right now people watch all this on their computers, which is fine. But thanks to Apple, and Apple really hasn't gotten around to pushing this hard yet, I don't think, but it's inevitable. It's inevitable that it will catch on. So we're getting to the point where people really are going to carefully select their television viewing. And if you have, as Lon's pointing out, if you've got the quality, and then I would add, if you've built a list and a promotion machine, you can equal what the television industry had to spend hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars to produce. It's really an amazing time.
It really is. And, I don't think it stops there. There was a recent announcement by TiVo and YouTube. TiVo, for those who have a TiVo, you know, these people are raving fans. And the reason for that is because, to a degree, it brings some of the capability of selecting more targeted content to view on your TV, much the same way that the internet does. Well, as these kinds of technologies start to mix and mash together, then we're really going to start to see some pretty exciting market reach, as you said. For the life of me, I can't understand why television manufacturers actually haven't jumped all over this to this point. It's kind of a mystery to me, but...
I tell you, it's probably inertia. You know, for the last, when televisions first started coming out in the late 40s, and now we're how many years out of that, 50, 60 years later, it's just hard to get big industries to wake up and turn around. But you're right, why don't televisions come with these things built in? And they will someday.
And it won't be that far off, I don't think. You know, that's one of the great things about the internet is this rapid adoption and this mass migration to certain technologies, you know, social networking on the internet. As soon as a groundswell of enthusiasts, if you will, start talking to everyone else, you know, all of a sudden the thing goes viral. And if you don't have this built into your television set, you're going to be the guy that was just suddenly rendered irrelevant. So,
right. Everybody at school or at the water cooler is talking about last night's show, and you don't even know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some practical applications for small business people. Let's take the example, I don't know, of somebody that sells shoes online. What kind of advice would you give to somebody that sells, let's make it concrete and say it is somebody that sells shoes. How might they use audiovisual and multimedia and video presentations to sell more products? And what kind of principles would you give them to guide their efforts?
Well, I think that just about anything that you can do to engage someone that is interested or needing shoes would be one thing. So there are certainly target markets where you could use a audio and visual presentation to talk about certain benefits, which really should always be the focus of whatever kind of multimedia content that you're trying to deliver. So even if it's a niche as obscure as shoes, and of course you could go deeper into that, like, you know, work boots, for example, if I could use that.
Yeah, let's that actually makes more sense. You don't sell the concepts of shoes in general.
Right.
You're selling a particular kind of shoe. So let's say someone who markets work boots.
Right. So, I mean, you can put up a long sales page or just, you know, product information and things like that, but the beauty of the multimedia experience is that you get to engage more of a viewer's senses. And from a sales and marketing perspective, that's really kind of where you want to be. You want to be engaging as many senses as possible so you could show, you know, some of the safety benefits in maybe even a humorous way. You know, one guy gets his foot busted and the other one just bounces off harmlessly, as it were. So, you know, there are certain things that you can do. In almost any area, if you look to show benefits, and always with an eye to what's in it for the customer, and what does the customer want and the customer need? There's almost always an idea or a concept that you can expand upon in some kind of visual way that, again, will increase the sales effectiveness of any presentation or sales page, for that matter. So that would be one of the major things. Now, if you're the manufacturer of safety shoes, then you can also use that type of multimedia content to, build community even. So mm-hmm. you could create videos and content and things of that nature and, you know, post it out to people in new markets that might not have otherwise been subjected to that kind of material. And, you know, again, when you use something that's visual, you end up with something that can be not just more engaging, but it could also go viral for that matter if you take a creative aspect to it. And that's the nice mm-hmm. thing about multimedia is that it's essentially a creative medium. And I'll give you a good example. There's a blender company, and I can't remember what it is, but they have videos out on YouTube, and it's essentially this guy comes out in a lab coat in a lab environment, and he has a blender in front of him. And the name of the little video segments that they put together is called Will It Blend? And this guy puts everything from iPods to shoes or whatever. He puts them in this blender, and then everybody just sits there and watch this amazing blender just smash whatever it is he puts in there to bits. And these things are extremely viral. They get watched a whole bunch of times. And I'll tell you what, if you're a blender and you can mash up some of the stuff that this guy mashes up, then that makes a pretty powerful visual impact. But they do it in this entirely tongue-in-cheek, absolutely entertaining way, and people share these videos with everyone. The things have millions of views. From a marketing perspective, and this obscure little blender company, I can't even think of another way that it would have been possible to get the kind of exposure that they've gotten and the mileage that they're getting out of that kind of a tactic.
And what's interesting it seems obvious now. You know, it seems like such an obvious strategy, but I guarantee it wasn't obvious. And somebody sat down and said, okay, we've got this product. How do we make it interesting? I guess that's one of the questions. How do we make it interesting? How do we dramatize it? How do we visually demonstrate what it does? Mm-hmm. And they thought and thought and thought, and they came up with this brilliant idea, and it has taken off. So basically, they've developed a cult following, and I think at this point, over a million people have seen these videos. And not every one of them is a blender prospect, but enough of them are, and there's now enough word of mouth about this product as a result of these videos. And what was the cost? The cost was to make the videos and to post them to the various video sharing sites, and they kind of took off from there. If I could give you an example from an interview that I did a couple of years ago for members of this System Club. Do you remember the Ginzu knife?
Oh, yeah.
Well, that was a hugely successful business. There hasn't been a Ginzu knife commercial in over 25 years, and yet if you mention Ginzu knife to people, everybody seems to know what it is. And at one point, they were buying as much television time as Coca-Cola in their heyday, and the company was purchased by Warren Buffett, which is just a sign of what a successful company it was. And the business was two guys, and they were always looking for new and interesting products, and they were in a supermarket, and they saw this bin full of knives, and steak knives, and different cutting knives, and they're just in a bin, $1 each, and that was the whole sales presentation. And they took some home and fooled around them and realized that they were really, really good knives. So they sat down and tried to figure out, okay, how do we dramatize how amazing these knives really are? Because the manufacturer wasn't very creative. Everybody knew they were good knives, and if you put them in a bin at the head of a supermarket aisle for a buck, you were going to sell them because it worked. But they thought, well, how can we do better with this? And so they spent a lot of time coming up with ways to visually dramatize the product at work, and it couldn't go viral because we didn't have viral video technology then. But in terms of it going viral with people telling people and people remembering, and comedians making spoofs of it and it becoming part of our culture, it certainly went viral that way. And again, same principle. What can you do to dramatize your product and make it memorable? This is different. Let me point out, this is different than copywriting, than classic copywriting. In fact, I did an interview, and this was exclusive to System Club members. No one else has ever heard it or ever will hear it by agreement with the person I interviewed. And that was Gary Bensavenga, who for the last 20-plus years, more actually, has been considered the most effective direct mail copywriter ever. And he only gave one interview in his career, and that was to me. And he spent a fair amount of time in that interview talking not about copywriting, but actually talking about the great short television commercials of his youth. The fantastic commercials for Timex, whose motto was, the clock takes a licking and keeps on ticking. Keeps on ticking, and they would do things like put a Timex around the blade of a boat propeller, and then send the boat around the lake, right. And the boat would come back, and they pull the clock off, and they watch off, and by God, it was still working.
Yep, I remember those.
Yeah, and see, again, those had not run. When those ran, there was no such thing as color TV. That's how old those things are. You remember them, I remember them, Gary remembers them.
Well, that's how old we are.
Well, yeah, hey, what can you say, So that's the kind of thing you should be looking for. Is there a quick, dramatic way to take the power of my product, whatever it is, and dramatize it? And it may take, it may take you some time to come up with it. But what you unleash when you do that is incredible and worth every bit of time you spend. Great. Now, let's talk about training, video and multimedia for training, because a lot of our listeners are info marketers, and even if they're not info marketers, training, product training, customer training is very often and could often be a very important part of the marketing mix. In fact, I think training is if you're selling a physical product, that's a secret weapon.
Mm-hmm.
And by that I mean is everybody knows they want a digital camera, but where do they go to find out which camera to buy and how to use the camera that they get? And the answer is pretty much nowhere. It's pretty hard to find that kind of information. So any marketer who invests a little time in making that information available is going to generate lead flow and a certain amount of viral traffic as well. So looking at that, and sometimes training is a standalone product. It's just something you can make and sell. So you've done a lot of training over the years, again, at a high level. What did you learn about what was important about designing training programs?
Well, I think one of the most important things that it's one thing to just put together a little tutorial on maybe how to use a product, but one thing that a lot of marketers don't do is make little videos that help your user consume your product more easily, faster, and better. A good example of that might be a tactic of, how when somebody orders something off of our pages, typically we may send them to a thank you page after they've completed the transaction to maybe download their product if it's a digital delivery product. This is a prime example of a great place to put a short video that explains to them how to get their product and how to consume it. What it does is, in their minds at that point in time, it lets them take ownership of that product that they just purchased, and it reinforces the fact that their buying decision was a good one. Because you know what happens? As soon as most people hit the buy button, they immediately, even subconsciously, start to suffer buyer's remorse. When you land them on a thank you page that gives them that reinforcement and that confidence that, hey, I just made a really good decision, this is one thing that you can do that goes a very long way in turning people from being just a customer into being a raving fan, as an example. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a little tactic that, we might not think of it as training, but really it is. It's training your customer how to use your product, but also training them in the sense that you are establishing your credibility with them as well. So that's an important aspect. Another thing that a lot of people do with training is it's very important, especially if it's a long, drawn-out process, to make it entertaining. To a degree. There's, nothing will plummet the effectiveness of how much a person learns from a training session than having them be bored to tears. The more engaged that you can keep them and the more interest and focus that they remain to have on your presentation, the more that they're going to retain, and again, the more effective that training is going to be. So one of the number one things that I talk about when, let's say we're doing a tutorial video, someone has just purchased a script for a server. It's a pretty cool product, and it does this really amazing thing, and now I want to show them how to use it. Well, one of the things you want to do is, it's called show the last thing first. So if you give them in the first minute of your presentation a 30,000-foot view of, this is what we're going to install, this is the coolest single thing about this, it really engages them. And then you can go into the long, drawn-out process of unzipping the file, using your FTP program to upload it to the server, and doing the, change permissions and all of that good stuff. But the best tip I can give in that respect is give just a little bit of time at the beginning and really try to draw people in quickly. And that's going to keep them with you for the remainder. And again, they're going to end up at the end of that presentation and think, well, that was a good presentation. Because even though they might not know it, you grab them right at the beginning in a very entertaining and non-boring way, and then took them through the rest of the process, and they stayed with you.
I really think I like that, and that's a very good model. And I think, for instance, in the world of music or sports or martial arts or any one of these performance-based practices, the great teachers always show the end result first. So the musician will demonstrate, this beautiful passage. Then, now the student becomes inspired by the music, by the technique. And then the teacher, after the student's been hooked, then breaks down the technical details that are necessary to get that effect. It's definitely done in martial arts. You throw the guy around the room, then you break it down and show people how you did it. And in martial arts in particular, it's almost like a magic trick. You want to do something so amazing and so devastating that everybody's just, their jaw hits the ground. They're going, my God, I could never do that. And then you say, well, I'll show you how to do it. Here's how it goes. Same thing with sports, on and on. Show the fireworks first, and then it's almost like a magician. If you think of a magician, does the trick first, and everybody's like, oh my God, that was
amazing.
How did
you do that?
Yeah, and now if you were to just walk out on the stage and start to give all the dry technical plumbing of how to execute the trick, people would fall out and fall asleep. But if you show them the exciting stuff and hook them, now they're going to want to get involved.
Right, and beyond that, it's also there's a confusion factor there, especially with something that is in nature somewhat complicated. A lot of presentations that I watch is, if you start off without showing where we're going to end up, people immediately are confused, and it's only if they're able to suffer through the 10 or 15 minutes of you explaining where we're going that they actually see the end result. It's just a psychological nosedive at that point. So you missed a golden opportunity to, like you say, grab them, get them hooked. And the thing that happens in people's minds is that, something may sound really great, and predominantly people will think in their minds, well, I could never do that. But when you see it, they start to formulate this thing visually in their mind that, well, yeah, maybe I can do that. And that's the emotional response that we're really looking for in almost any situation. And, we were talking about this in terms of tutorial videos or training videos, but it's even more important if you use that crucial aspect in a sales video. I don't know how many product demonstrations I've seen on sales pages where the first thing someone shows is, okay, here's how to unzip the product, how to FTP it up to the server. But again, that's no kind of demo you want to have on a sales page. You definitely want to hook them and get them visualizing in their mind that yes, that this is absolutely something that I want to do, and then go ahead and fill in the details.
And I want to point out that you need both. You need both the 30,000 foot view that gets everybody excited, and you need to roll up your sleeves and show the detail in as much minute detail as needed. You know, one or the other isn't enough. I mean, there's plenty of internet marketers, for example, that show all the excitement, and then when the smoke clears, there's nobody there to show you the details.
Right.
And so that's not good. It's also not good just to be detail oriented. You really need that mix. You know, listeners have probably noticed that we've talked nearly for an hour, and we haven't really talked about technology that much. We've really talked about, I guess, what I would call presentation design or information design, how to present, and the things that are important when you're designing a presentation. It's not just turning the camera on and having a video. But let's talk in the last minutes of this call about some technology issues. One thing that I recommend to a lot of people who are new to all this is to definitely consider strongly getting Camtasia and make that, before they get into live video where they're actually shooting video, consider starting with that as an intermediate step, developing slideshows and then recording those slideshows in Camtasia. What would your take be on let's say we're talking to somebody who has not done any kind of audio, video, visual, multimedia or video stuff on the internet at all. You know, where do you begin? Do you buy, you know, the 3-chip camera and the light setup and the microphones and recording, mm-hmm. or where would you start?
Well, Camtasia is kind of my area of expertise, so I'm kind of partial to it. But the reason I am partial to it is because I don't need to have a lot of that extraneous gear. You know, doing a screencast video or a screen capture video, which is essentially what Camtasia is. Anything you can see on your screen, any mouse movement, any keyboard strokes can all be recorded by the Camtasia recorder, which just sits there and runs in the background and essentially records what happens on the screen and your voice narration and things like that. So I think that is absolutely an excellent way to go ahead and get started, because what it does is it allows you to, if you're working online, it allows you to prove what you assert. In other words, you know, I could say that something is easy to use, but until I actually show someone or until they actually see it, then there's that lingering doubt, of course. Well, that's one of the things Camtasia allows you to do, is to actually show, you know, your PayPal account results, or show the installation of this particular product, or show what it looks like live and up and running. So that's one of the biggest benefits there. And to get started with Camtasia, you know, you don't need a lot of fancy equipment. You do need the software, and if you're going to be narrating, which I kind of highly recommend, you do need some kind of microphone kind of gear. This can range wildly from, you know, a cheap $10 headset that came with your webcam to, you know, I use a full studio quality microphone type of setup. But the good news is that there are a lot of options in between. And again, audio is one of the things that you should look at and focus on. So there are what are called USB microphones now, and these are basically studio quality microphones that plug into the USB port of your computer. It's really pretty much that simple, and these can be had for $100 or less, and to get studio quality sound. So there's that component of the hardware, as it were. And one suggestion that I would give to folks out there that don't have Camtasia already, it's about $299. So it is a bit of a significant investment. But here's the thing, is that TechSmith, who makes the product, and you can get it at TechSmith.com, offer a 30-day evaluation of the product, and this is a fully functioning, no crippling whatsoever version of the product. Well, I would suggest that if you do a little bit of planning up front, get some content ideas ready to go, make sure that you have, you know, a microphone and things that can get some decent quality sound, you can actually put together some of your marketing materials ahead of time. Go ahead and get the evaluation version, and within 30 days, if you do it right, create your video content in your presentations, maybe do video reviews for affiliate products, things like that. Get those posted out, sent to your list, do some list building, you know, all the typical marketing stuff, and essentially pay for your version of Camtasia before your 30-day eval is up. So
that's a great idea. Great idea. Now, this is not a rigged question. It's a serious one. Where would people go to get training in how to use Camtasia?
Well, TechSmith actually has really beefed up their tutorial sections of their website and their product. The newest version of Camtasia is version 5, and they have a very good suite of how to get up and running with Camtasia. The other good resource that I think for a little bit more advanced work is from a good friend of mine, Chris Austin, and he is at masteringcamtasia.com. There you find, you know, much more in-depth tutorials on how to do specific things and a good community of people to answer questions and things like that. So there's kind of two aspects there. You know, just one, going through the video tutorials and getting up to speed with the software in general. But, you know, that's all well and good. But after that, where do you really, you know, find the good stuff on how to use it effectively, especially for marketing purposes? So Chris's site is real good. By the time System Seminar is out, my site will have been launched at screencastprofits.com, and that's really kind of what I'm all about with that particular product. It's how to make effective Camtasia videos that are a cut above, and then how to use certain tactics in marketing efforts. So the information is out there, and there are a couple of other good resources. The webvideozone.com by Joe Chappas, excellent resource. AskMrVideo.com by Perry Lawrence. Okay. Good stuff.
So there's a lot of resources. So, and I would recommend, at a minimum, take advantage of the TechSmith training. Don't just get the program and try to sort it out yourself. Plan some training time. And even though it's pretty straightforward technology, the more you know, the more effective you're going to be in using it. And this is it's not just an intermediate measure, because a lot of people are happy just to stay at the Camtasia level and can be tremendously effective at that level. But I do notice a lot of folks sometimes get enthusiastic about video. They don't necessarily have any experience with video, and they run out and they buy cameras and lights and programs and all this kind of stuff, and it can run into the many, many thousands of dollars very quickly. And I would just say, not necessary. Spend, what is it, you said $299?
For Camtasia, yeah.
Yeah, and part, a huge part of video is telling stories with pictures. So it's not, you know, the equipment is nice, but 99% of it is knowing how to tell stories with pictures. Yeah, I recommend this as a good intermediate step, and maybe even not intermediate, but your final step, because there certainly are a lot of people that have gotten a lot of mileage and get a lot of mileage out of Camtasia alone. You know, shooting video is an art. It's a profession. There are people that have spent their whole lives learning how to get good at it. And my recommendation is you might consider hiring those people on a limited basis when you need them to shoot video for you, rather than buying a camera and trying to figure it out yourself. But the other reason to start with Camtasia is this. Video is storytelling with pictures. And that's an art, and that's something that you learn with experience. It's much better, I think, to have an inexpensive platform that you can learn relatively readily and just practice telling lots and lots of different stories. And I call them stories, but it could be a sales presentation, it could be a training program, but we'll use the word stories as shorthand. Get good at telling stories with pictures in an inexpensive platform that's just $2.99. If you find that you have a knack for it and you like doing it, now's the time to think about making the investment in video. See, the fact that video cameras are powerful and inexpensive, and the fact that we can now edit video inexpensively on our home computers, really doesn't mean much. It's not a substitute for skill in telling stories with pictures. So start at a smart level, find out if you actually like it, and then you may find yourself making an investment down the road in all kinds of video gear. But I would recommend everybody listening to this call start with Camtasia first. I think this one piece of advice could save you several times the cost of all the products that we've discussed, plus the System Seminar, because I have seen people spend $10,000 and up on equipment that just ends up in their closet. and used video equipment, Lon, as you know, not necessarily selling at full retail price.
Hardly ever, yeah.
Which is another piece of advice. If you're going to buy video equipment and you know somebody reliable, get it used. No need to buy it right out of the box. Plenty of used stuff around. Well, we could talk all day about this stuff, and you're going to be giving two presentations at the system, one to a private presentation to the system club members. That's alumni of past system events. It's a special thing we do to our returning students. And we have a tremendous number of people coming back multiple times to the system seminar. And to thank them, we put on a pre-seminar event for them. You'll be presenting there, and you'll also be doing a workshop at System 2008. This year, everybody, System 2008 is going to be in Chicago, as always, on May 30th, 31st, and June 1st. We'd love to see you there if it makes sense for you to be there. It is a limited enrollment. We only have room for about 500 people this year. Once we max out, that's it. If you can't come for some reason or if you missed the cutoff, make sure you take advantage of these free pre-system teleseminar calls. As you can see from this call, we put a ton of effort into making sure that you're getting content that you can use now. I think you've gotten more than a few ideas that you can walk away from and use in your business and profit from in your business today. You might want to listen to the call a couple of times, especially if you're considering a big investment in the multimedia video arena. Lon shared a lot of insider's advice, the kind of things that you can only figure out after years and years of high-level, high-stakes trial and error. Lon will be one of 25 faculty members this year. I have 25 special workshops. We're also going to have some general sessions. One featuring Glenn Livingston, who, for my money, is the single best internet niche finder in the world. Nobody's even close to him. We're also going to have a very special presentation from an executive, Tom Leung, from Google. He's the product manager for Web Optimizer, which is a system for allowing you to track your results from your advertising campaigns and test one element in your ad against another. This is a big breakthrough, and Google is giving it away free to everyone, and you'll be getting it straight from Google at the system. I believe we're the first seminar of our type to ever be visited by any company at that level, so we're very excited about that. So I hope to see everybody in Chicago. Lon, thank you so much for your time on this call. Thanks for joining us in Chicago. I'm looking forward to hearing your presentation, and I hope everybody listening got a lot out of your call. In fact, I know they did.
Thanks a lot. I'm really, really looking forward to it, and it'll be all kinds of fun.
It really is. You know, we're certainly talking about business, and sometimes we get into some technical issues, but it's a very good group of people. If you're new to internet marketing or you're new to our circle, I want to assure you it's a friendly, positive, open environment. We are all there to learn from each other. Nobody has all the answers. Everybody brings their own piece of the puzzle. And even if you don't know much about internet marketing or even marketing, you're certainly coming with life experiences and business experiences that would benefit everyone. No head is higher than anybody else's. It's all about disseminating and sharing and encouraging and inspiring each other.
I would suggest that probably the single biggest and best thing that people that haven't been to an event can do is to get to an event. There's no substitute for the networking with people and learning the types of things that you need. And it's as a result of that that, you know, I think you can point to almost any marketer and they would say that that is one of the single biggest factors to their success. So I'd just add that in.
Yeah, I would have to agree. I mean, you have to do your own homework and your own self-study. You have to do your own experiments and your own projects. And, you know, people can't hold your hand there, but there is another really big element to success in this field, which is meeting other practitioners and other marketers, people at your level, people above you in experience, and people, you know, who don't have as much experience as you do in becoming a mentor to them as others mentor you. And that third element of, for lack of a better word, networking, and networking doesn't even begin to describe the value of it,
right,
is really, really important.
It really is.
There's nothing like being in a room with, you know, 300, 400, 500 other folks that are interested and excited and experienced in internet marketing. It makes so much of what we're all trying to learn separately come alive and be real. So again, for everybody, this is going to be held in Chicago. It's System 2008. It's our annual conference. I've been putting on annual internet events since 1994. In 2002, I put the name The System on them, and I opened the doors to everybody who was interested. We've been growing steadily every year. We get a little bit bigger. never too big that we lose our original impulse, which is to make sure this information is comprehensible and available to everybody that wants it. But we are it's a strong event, and if you're someone that has been to other internet seminars, you really are cheating yourself seriously if you've never been to one of ours. You have no idea what you're missing. Perry Marshall, for example, one of the top internet experts, universally acknowledged, has never missed one of our events. He's been to every single one. And there are a lot of people who are doing 7 and even 8 figures a year in sales that have the same opinion. They just don't go to the other stuff. They only come at this point now to the system seminar. So for information about this, you can go to thesystemseminar.com, where you'll see Lon and our other faculty members and hundreds and hundreds of other bright, generous, smart, interesting internet marketers who you can share stories with and share information with. So again, Lon, thanks a lot. And to everybody, I'll see you in Chicago. And whether you come to Chicago or not, make sure that you take advantage of all the pre-system calls. There is a full seminars with the material in these pre-system calls, and you can benefit tremendously. This is Ken McCarthy saying goodbye for Lon Naylor and the rest of the system faculty. See you in Chicago.